So today it's my pleasure to introduce to you Professor Christian Polke. He's presently a postdoctoral research assistant in the theology department at the University of Hamburg, and his research focuses on political and legal ethics and the impact of theology on public life. A recipient of the John F. Templeton Award for Theological Promise in 2010, which is quite a prestigious award, I should add, he's completing a manuscript entitled Expressive Theism, Reconsidering the Question of a Personal God. His dissertation, titled Religious Neutrality of the Modern State, A Study in Political Ethics, was published in 2009. He studied Protestant theology, philosophy, and law in Berlin, Heidelberg, and Tübingen, and he received his PhD from Heidelberg University. Today's talk is entitled Power, History, and Meaning, World Religions and Political Affairs, and I'm delighted to welcome you here to the Boisy Center today.
Yeah, thank you for the kind introduction, and enjoy your meal, and I hope I can enlighten you with some theoretical questions, but just enjoy your meal and follow the argumentation. Power, History, and Meaning, World Religions and Political Affairs. The invoked revival of religion into the area of globalized politics has caused much fear and unease, often accompanied by almost complete ignorance. It sounds almost macabre, but theology as well as religious studies have profited as academic disciplines, especially in Europe, from the negative impacts of 9/11, especially by higher reputation in public circles and higher rates of public financial support. When we are looking these days on the situation in Afghanistan, it seems quite obvious, for example, that religious factions and convictions can play a bad role in recent military conflicts, though there are no empirical proofs to the fact they ever caused one primarily. Therefore, it depends really from the perspective whether one sees in religious traditions victims of political instrumentalization, or contrary to that, instruments for struggle for power, recognition, and influence on societal fields. In any case, theology, religious studies, and social science draw the consequences out of the new situation of the last two decades by coming up with detailed empirical and historical studies concerning the interdependencies of religion and politics worldwide. Thereby, in my view, two main approaches of scientific discovery can be distinguished. The first one takes mostly place within social science, especially in regional studies. They discuss the empirical questions on the role and the influence religious actors have within political discourses and conflicts. In contrast to these more or less micro-sociological approaches, the research on the field of history of ideas asks more conceptually for affirmative interpretations or reinterpretations of religious convictions, let's say when it comes to questions of democratic values and democratic citizenship. Now, both approaches are needed. Both do bring benefits as well as they carry on some methodological and conceptual problems. So far, I will not discuss either of them in my talk. Instead, my claim as a systematic theologian who is interested in questions of political theory and ethics is to specify the interpenetrations of politics and religion from the backdrop of a cultural theory. By focusing on the connections between the dimensions of power, history, and meaning in the emergence of and establishment of social order, I hope to develop some hermeneutical instruments for a comparative political ethics of world religions. And for this task, which is fairly ambitious for 20 minutes, I will refer to two main thinkers of political theory in the 20th century, namely Cornelius Castoriadis and Erik Voegelin. To start with the former, what is interesting in Castoriadis' political philosophy, as it had mainly conceptualized in his book The Imaginary Institution of Society from 1975, and besides other aspects, of course, is his emphasis on the importance of the dimension of meaning for any adequate understanding of societies in general and politics in special. Societies do not simply consist of functionally operating institutions and organizations on the one hand and people who live in and by them on the other side. Such an understanding would be totally, for Castoriadis at least, totally misleading because it takes seriously neither the nature, the essence of the political, as it was first recognized by the old Greeks, for him, nor the symbolic form of representation political and social practices even today rely on. without ignoring what he calls the real and the rational as also basic elements for social reality, Castoriadis therefore insists on the relevance of the political as it mainly appears in its character as imaginary and as a specific form of symbolic action. So far, the concept of imaginary plays a central, even perhaps the crucial role in Castoriadis' thinking. Societies represent thereby complex orders in which a world of all-embracing significance is constructed by including the apprehended and observed real, the functionally recognized and understood rational, and the sphere of the various symbolically coded. Quotation. The institution of society is the institution of social imaginary significations. In principle, this institution has to confer meaning on everything that might present itself in society as well outside it. Thus, societies do not present static orders. Moreover, they participate in processes of their permanent transformation, of the transformation of the institutional patterns as well, which sometimes lead even to radical revolutions. As a consequence, following Castoriadis means to respect more carefully the fact that societies reconstruct and recreate themselves permanently by creative reinterpretations their members do by means of a reservoir infinite of a surplus of meaning. And this is what Castoriadis called strange magma. The magma thus forms the sphere of the imaginary that will not be absorbed by the spheres of the real, the rational, or even the symbolic, but what could only be achieved and expressed through the gestalts of the real, the symbolic, and the rational. The concept of imaginary in Castoriadis refers to the fact that societies have always been shaped by specific significances and values, value judgments, which for themselves don't derive from rational or conscious action. A German term would say Setzung, and Castoriadis used this idealistic term, but from self-creation. The imaginary has to use the symbolic not only to express itself, this is self-evident, Castoriadis wrote, but to exist, to pass from the virtual to anything more than this. This self-creation is likely being a creatio ex nihilo. And this is interesting for theologians that Castoriadis used that phrase. A real creative act of human thinking and conduct. Therefore, the imaginary does not function as denotational category, but as a connotational one. Only by this it shapes the dimensions of social reality and the institutional expressions. And that's the quotation, to tie together world image and society's own society's image, therefore also the image of its place in the world, have always been two sides of the same coin. They have belonged to the same magma of social imaginary signification. Now, what is then special for traditional societies in history is the fact that their last and radical forms of the imaginary, their radical imaginary, which underlie the whole world of significance and the start of their representation within their social order, often were symbolized by God's reference. What is the origin, the cause, the foundation of the institution, that is to say, of society? What is its wherefore, its raison d'être? To this question, religion has since all time provided a response in affirming that the institution of society proceeds from the same origin as everything else. That it possesses, therefore, the same solidity and the same foundation as the entire world and the things contained therein, and a finality that is articulated in conjunction with their own finality. Cornerstone of the institution of society, vehicle for the ultimate significations and guarantors of all the others, religion must sanctify, in one manner or the other, both its own origin and the origin of the institution of society whose core it forms. Though Castoriadis, as a thinker, was deeply influenced by Marxism, does not really believe that religious social imaginaries can function as possible options any longer, he remains critical towards secular alternatives as well, especially towards the Marxist forms or substitutes. Therefore, Castoriadis has no doubt even modern societies cannot overcome their need of a radical imaginary. Even society up to now has attempted to give an answer to a few fundamental questions. Who are we as a collectivity? What are we for another, for one another? And where and in what are we? What do we want? What do we desire? What do are we lacking? Society must define its identity, its articulation, the world, its relation to the world and to the objects it contains, its needs and its desires. Modern societies then only differ from earlier traditional societies in a more or less secular nature, and that is, their social imaginaries take shape as imminent form of secular utopias or ideologies. Thus, Castoriadis' critique does not refer to traditional or modern patterns of the imaginary in general. Moreover, the main problem results out of the functioning of the imaginary itself. In any case of its symbolic articulation, the imaginary tends, for Castoriadis, to let people, as individual agents, forget that it was them who created a society and who are still able to reinterpret, to criticize, and to transform it. The aura or the nimbus of sanctity, which is common for every cultural taboo, which is also probably also one form of social imaginary, creates an atmosphere of radical authority that embarrasses individual subjects in their creative actions. And thus one could also say, when it comes to the crazy divine given magma, there is only a small thin line between God and the idols, between product and fetish, to use a Marxistic phrase. Religious forms of magma endanger the autonomy of society, so to say, in a very radical manner. And for Castoriadis, especially the history of religions is full exactly of this behavior. People were treated and kept in inactivity or lethargy through legitimating social order by a divine power who to resist already meant ideology and brought the delinquent therefore mostly to social and more often also to physical death. So the history of political order, the process of ongoing transforming institutionalization can be described in the line of Castoriadis as well as a process of sacralization, but its permanent rearrangements by symbols of the different magmas, to use a phrase from Hans Blumenberg. In spite of the fact, Castoriadis was clearly right in his critique on the deformational power religions traditions sometimes had, and by therefore a call for pushing them back to save human autonomy was needed, but he did not spend enough work on any historical proof on this fact. Moreover, instead he more or less ignored the wide range of differences and dynamics within the history of religions through the centuries. Thus he consequently failed in observing a plurality of patterns in which the relation between God and world, between the transcendent and the mundane aspects of reality, in which spiritual and political power can be described. And so far, and for any better understanding of what I call the dynamics of the religio-political within human history, there's a phrase from David Martin, a more comparative approach seems to be more appropriate. And that brings me to the Axial Age theories, and especially to the version of Axial Age in Eric Voegelin. Short break, second. Eric Voegelin has immensely researched in the issue of order and history, as his unfinished opus magnum is entitled. In the volumes of this magisterial work, he asked for the various symbolic systems that have given meaning to social and political order in human history. Quotation, the self-illumination of society through symbols is an integral part of social reality, and one may even say its essential part, for through such symbolizations, the members of a society experience it as more than an accident or a convenience. They experience it as their human essence, and inversely, the symbols express that man is fully man by virtue of his participation in a whole which transcends his particular existence. Thereby, Voegelin's interest is guided by his conviction that only through deep analysis of the cultural, respectively symbolic vocabularies of the historical societies, can give a sufficient answer to the question for what the political is all about. Then Voegelin speaks of the drama of human existence. Then he pursues a twofold goal. First, he wants to emphasize, like Castoriadis does, that man is both a philosophical as well as a political being, which is challenged to act together with others in different orders and to ask thereby for his personal and social identity. And his second claim is to reject from the very beginning any kind of teleological understanding or concept of history. Otherwise, one could not speak of both the drama of history and the dignity of human's capacity to create his own institutionally formed life worlds. Therefore, human history must be recognized as an openly but ambivalent process of self-clarification of human mankind. Now, as far as different civilizations in history have expressed their world experiences and their understandings of politics through different symbolic sets, their view on the very nature of what we call the political as the basic form of human self-interpretation through discovering an order in reality differ. Like Castoriadis, Voegelin shares the importance of the human capacity to imagine, construing a symbolic worldview that helps people to get orientation in their life and for their existence. But for Voegelin, already this imaginary competence of man does not result out of a poor or mere projection or even illusion. Moreover, the partial benefits, and there can only be partial, no absolute ones, as long as history exists, the partial benefits of human imaginary are grounded in reality itself, because it is reality that is, to some extent, symbolic, or more precisely, shows an imaginary dimension. Imagination, writes Voegelin, as a structure in the process of a reality that moves towards its truth, belong to both to human consciousness and its bodily location and to the reality that comprehends bodily located man as a partner in the community of being. There is no truth symbolized without man's imaginative power to find the symbols that will express his response to the appeal of reality. Again, the similarities between Voegelin and Castoriadis should not disguise us that their conceptions are based on completely different methodologies and theological impacts. Though both thinkers understand human history as the crucial medium in which human beings and societies ask for also ultimate meaning and represent them by institutional practices and social orders, only Voegelin was obviously interested in the historical analysis of several qualitative differences between various symbolisms of the political power and the cosmosociological order through history. These qualitative gaps, so to say, have changed the view on politics and their moral dimension profoundly. Thereby, Axial Age is simply the name for the crucial period in human history that obviously has influenced the following centuries most extensively by challenging the old symbiotic order of divine or transcendent on the one and mundane immanent reality on the other side, especially when it comes to questions of political power and leadership. However skeptically Voegelin remained towards the Axial Age theory in general, especially to the version which can be found in Jaspers, he nevertheless accepted that during this special period between 800 and 200 BCE in Old Israel and Old Greek, in China and India, and perhaps as well in Persia, a radical and important breakthrough has happened by the emergence of new forms of symbolism, using first time in human history universal categories like humanity, humankind, and so on, and by imagining new models of a universal moral order inspired by transcendental or transcendent visions, images, imaginations of the good that almost always were visualized by God or the gods. Voegelin speaks of multiple and parallel leaps in being, Seinsprung. Now you hear this existentialistic Heideggerian voice in that phrase. The meaning of human existence, the meaning of political power and of human action was from then on conceptualized through a religious symbolism that focused on real tensions that lie in the heart of the relation between God and man, God and king, the divine and the mundane reality. By interpreting social order radically through the perspective of a divine and universal all-encompassing counter-reality, the former sanctified traditional orders got into question and were often transformed. Therein, one very basic reason can be recognized why all so-called world religions tend to act offensively in political affairs, as the subtitle of my talk suggests, and why it is a certain kind of naivety to think that the day will come when they will completely withdraw from politics at all. Therefore, what Castoriadis called the danger of an ideologically inspired radical self-inclusion, which lies in the heart of the radical imaginary, which for him lies in the sideline of every concept of radical imaginary, be it religious or secular, can be for Voegelin and other axial age theorists only arrive when the crucial axial tension between the universal divine order on the one and the particular mundane order on the other side was eliminated before. In these cases, we could speak, again with Voegelin, of political religions, when the holism of the universal religious symbolism has turned into a political ideological totalitarianism of a particular social order of race, nation, class, and so on. But I cannot go into further details, unfortunately, at this stage of my argumentation. To give a first conclusion, the conflictual dynamics between religious traditions and political powers which shape human history from its very beginning can never be stopped or abolished. Both dimensions, religion and politics, represent important elements of the human condition that helps to keep alive, to stabilize, and to guarantee the process of societal recreation via reinterpretation, in the end, the search of an all-embracing meaning and significance. What is then remaining is again twofold: the need for comparative cultural theory and an ethical approach to the meaning of human power and its morally and responsibly handling or management. This leads me to the last part of my consideration. Of course, what I have presented so far are only prolegomena to what I would call a comparative political ethics of world religions. The limitations of my argumentation are quite obvious. There's no empirical considerations in my talk, and I only have treated two political theorists, Voegelin and Castoriadis, who are not very prominent in the current debate on the problem of the theological political. Of course, there are some good reasons for my selective approach, not only because of the strict time schedule, one other results from the fact contemporary political philosophy have often taken for granted the only way out of the political problems with religious traditions would be to stress on the true, really true secular nature of politics. In consequence of that argumentation, one often easily underestimate or even completely ignore the symbolic and imaginary dimensions of politics. This is why I have concentrated my argumentation so much on Voegelin and Castoriadis. Compared with this, my own imbalance much more lies in excluding the question of discursive power of politics that shapes both language and action, Legend and Tolkien, to use Castoriadis' terms. Thus, a critical genealogy of symbolic patterns of political and religious vocabularies could help to uncover, disclose, or reveal the hidden and implicit mechanisms of inclusion and exclusion within the institutions of social imaginaries and worldviews through which every society constitutes itself by everyday practices, as well as through their organizations and institutions in economical, bureaucratical, artificial dimensions. Especially for axial traditions, with their emphasis on a moral universalism, this point, the question of inclusion and exclusion, calls for higher attention and care. And for any further conceptual work on this topic, in my view, central insights were already given by the writings of Michel Foucault. But because the 20 minutes are already over, I now really have to concentrate myself in the very last sentence of this talk on the ethical framework that builds the backdrop of my considerations. As a result of my argumentation on the symbolic dimension of the political, we have to reinterpret the interpenetrations between the two dimensions of power and meaning through history. In his famous essay on love, power, and justice, Paul Tillich had already remembered of the defamation of human power and leadership so typical for Protestant intellectual thinking, but which neither does justice to the creative dimension of human action, nor does it take seriously the claims of religious ethics at all. Even problems of, let's say, how to implement human rights worldwide, or how to reach common equality rules in international economics, require for a critical outlook regarding the question, who is the ethically and juridically legitimated subject of these political actions, and what are their means? By no way questions of power, dealing with power, could be suspended. We must remember that power is never only a physical force, but it is also the power of symbols and ideas in which the life of social groups express itself and their identities. Human power as a specific act of self-transformation therefore belongs to human condition with its various forms of creative action. Without power we could not even give meaning to social reality, not to mention to rebuild or to reform it. However, if this is true, then we cannot clearly distinct once and for all questions of ultimate meaning from questions of particular or penultimate meaning in politics. So it seems to be much easier to state the doctrine of two kingdoms or two spheres, for example, than to act according to it. Because in reality, and this does not only apply to Islamic cultures, the transitions are fluently. With it, another point is interrelating. The world of politics and the world of religion are both worlds of search for personal and social identity formation. Above all, the axial religions and worldviews represent social imaginaries that target both an individual good life in a common good society. Thereby, the different religious symbolisms entangle with other symbolisms, especially with the political ones. Thus, it is a task for any political ethics of world religions sensitive to different cultural contexts to focus on the various interdependencies between the ways and practices of political and social identity formation and the influence religious symbolisms and religious actors play within these processes. In order to do this, we should pay again more attention on the pathologies, the different patterns of the religio-political have formed through history as a kind of self-legitimation. Otherwise, we would simply ignore the almost to everybody obvious experience that religions are leading sometimes to great advance, and moral advance especially, and sometimes to deep moral failures. This does not mean to neglect the furthermore important questions, for example, how far creative reinterpretations of different religious symbolism can help to encourage democratic efforts out of the own traditions. There is a need for humanetics in theological ethics by doing this work of a comparative approach to religious semantics. But as long as concepts of political ethics, especially and even in theology, still promote the illusion that we can sharply separate the questions of the ultimate from that of the penultimate, and as long as they suggest there might be a perspective of a global consensus to a common understanding of the religious secular or the holy profane dichotomy, which should be, in our view, so central and crucial to the sphere of religion, our discussions may be endless, but more or less, I think, fruitless when it comes out to the results. On contrary, my argument for a political ethics of world religions that is sensitive to both cultural context and global human history, or comparative global human history, refers to a humanetics of the foreign and follows an option, what Michael Walzer once called an itinerative universalism. For Christianity to come at last in the very end to my own profession as a systematic theologian, one crucial task would be to ask what is really meant in the Apostles' Creed when power is only twice predicated to God, namely to God as the creator and to God as the last judge, both in combination with the symbol of the Father. And what consequences lie in that concept of divine power when it comes to human empowerment in being politically as well as morally responsible towards creation? And finally, why is it then that in the most serious situations of life, the ideal of a Christian existence calls for an attitude of radical detachment and self-sacrifice. The challenges for a Christian ethics that is neither naive nor simplistic, but keep its eyes open to real politics, in my view, are enormous, and sorry for that, not even approximately considered yet. Thanks for your attention.